Attention entrepreneurs and business owners. It's time to stop working so hard, start working smart, and build a business that stands on its own.
Generate real wealth, real freedom,
and a real legacy.
Now from New York City, small business champion and business attorney, helping thousands of entrepreneurs generate hundreds of millions of dollars. Here's Nina Kaufman, and this is the Cash Out Big Podcast.
Hey, how are you? Nina Kaufman here, and welcome back to Cash Out Big. I hope you're doing well, that your year is wrapping up nicely, you're having a great holiday season. And, this is our 95th episode. So if this is your first time or your 95th time, again, it's a Cash Out Big podcast. And what we want to do is share tips and tools and experts all around how do you grow and scale your business so it can really start to function without you, so it can give you the breathing room that you want to do other things in your life, start to generate more of a regular income stream for you so that you're not hunting for clients and business all the time. And that's why every single week we're talking to experts on scaling a service business. So this week we have Esther Kiss, who's a PR and publicity maven. And one of the things you're going to hear talk about is how publicity is not for everyone. Your business really needs to be ready for it. Well, how do you know if you're ready? Well, one of the things that you can look at is actually your cash flow. Because if your cash flow is irregular, then the likelihood is you don't have a consistent message out there that's getting to your referral sources, that's getting to potential clients to let them know that yours is the go-to company for whatever kind of consulting or service that you provide. And this happened to someone that I was working with this week where there too, he just wasn't sure how to describe what his law firm did. He does some very unconventional kinds of litigation and was complaining, understandably, that it's tough, isn't it? It's tough when you got a big hit and then it can be really quiet, like crickets in the outfield for a couple of months. And planning that properly and knowing how are you going to feed your employees or your other vendors, it gets scary. It gets scary and it takes a toll on many different areas of our lives. So some of the things that we talked about were really looking at how is he communicating and describing what it is he does. And this may seem very basic, but if you're in a position where, hey, you know, referrals are not as regular as you would like, I invite you to give some thought as we're going into the new year. Are you as crystal clear and compelling as you can be about describing who you serve and the problems you solve? So that's something I was talking about with Steve. I first asked him, how would you describe the cases you take on? And it was this wide range of crazy kind of litigation. But trying to distill, are there certain words that keep coming up? Are there certain subject areas? Are there certain problems that he solves over and over and over again? So to take a look at that, write those down. If there are words that come up on a regular basis, Make a list, a column for a list for that. And then another thing would be, how would the clients describe you? What are the words they're using? Because very often, and I know our guest is going to talk about this as well, she says, you know, meet your clients where they are. And it's a challenge for those of us, I have both hands raised, when we come from a highly intellectual profession that involves its own language. We're so used to talking our own language that we're not always talking the language of our clients. So asking and getting that information from clients, maybe make a commitment to yourself over the next week or so is pick up the phone, call your five favorite clients and ask them for, you know, 2, 3, 5 words that they would use to describe you, your firm, your services, and the problems that you solve. And another thing that I asked Steve to do was to look at his favorite clients and why they were his favorites. What was it, if there's anything, that they have in common? Is it something about the issues that he handled for them that he so enjoyed that he could really sink his teeth into and his firm could sink their teeth into and enjoy it because it was a really cutting edge issue? Was it that these were people who paid really nicely and helped the firm earn a profit? Or was it something about how they interacted? They were just easy to work with. They were responsive if you ask for information. They didn't create a fuss. They weren't calling you panicking, creating drama all the time. What is it that makes those clients the favorites. So that's, again, another column of looking at what are the psychographics or the aspects of favorite clients that perhaps you can bring together. And then as you're out there asking your referral sources and speaking at events and putting copy on your website, that crystal clarity helps those referral sources come in much, much more regularly than throwing spaghetti to the wall and hoping something will stick and come through. That's kind of sort of what you want to do. So just a thought for moving into the new year, whether you've got some good referrals, but you'd like to bump it up a notch, or whether you're really in a place of tough peaks and valleys of cash flow. And I'll tell you, I've been there as well. It's one of the reasons that we came up with our Cash Out Big webinar, because we saw that so many business owners were often reinventing the wheel every day. And that's where you can get a little taste of our scale formula and how to make your life so much easier. Have a look for that on our website at businessexponential.com. And now for our guest. And I'm very happy to have Esther Kiss on the show. As I mentioned, she is the founder of Born to Influence. It's a boutique publicity firm. And she really takes the lid off of media, because it's so tempting. Oh, I know, I've squandered so much money on media. And it never panned out because either I wasn't consistent enough, or my brand message wasn't strong enough, or, hey, imagine all of a sudden the floodgates open and your business doesn't have the team, the service, the back end, whatever that is, to serve those clients well. So all of those things need to be in place. And she really takes us through step by step what's involved in getting more publicity, more leads, and more sales. And we are delighted to have her here on Cash Out Big. Esther, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Nina. So excited.
So I want to hear a little bit about your background, because you have traversed continents and countries to land in Palm Springs, California, with an unusual business model. So tell me a little bit about how you got to really be focusing on helping people develop those kinds of long-term collaborations and cross-promotions that can really boost their business.
Yeah, I think it has to do a little bit with being a very curious person and always just finding what's the next right move rather than having a big master plan overall for my life. So it was a little bit like a treasure hunt going from queue to queue. And I ended up traveling a lot and have lived in 6 other countries before I moved over here to the U.S. And the way it became this business model that you're asking about here, it developed organically as well. I have a background in marketing and business development for about 16 years now. And 3 years ago, I really, really wanted to take it up a level and play a bigger game. And I wanted to connect with high-level influencers, very successful entrepreneurs, and New York Times bestselling authors. And I didn't know what the business per se would be. I just knew that I needed to develop these relationships. So with my good friend, Meta Miller, we launched a podcast called Born to Influence with the sole idea of giving a platform to some of these really successful entrepreneurs and start developing relationships with them. And I didn't know exactly what I would do with them other than making friends. So I thought, well, people who have books coming out, or they have an event coming up, or a new coaching program or something like that. And so I was wondering, how could I do this in a way that is actually helpful for them? And so every time we would stop the interview recording, I would say, hey, I know you have this book coming out. Would you like to be on other shows as well? And they would always say yes. So I would start introducing them, booking them on other podcasts and other media outlets as well, introducing them to people who would be helpful to them, who they could do business with together, and never taking a commission or doing an affiliate manager type of deal or anything like that, just simply to build a relationship. And And at some point, mm-hmm. it developed into an actual business.
Right. Because you can't always keep giving for free.
One of my clients came to me and he said, like, can you help this guy get on some podcasts? I'm like, yeah, sure. And he's like, yeah, but this time you have to charge for it. So I'm like, okay, fine. If you insist.
Great.
Yeah, so, it didn't occur to me that I could.
But now you know, and you know how important that is. And you also, in working with these other business owners, understand how important it is for them to be able to leverage their influence, leverage their brand awareness. What are some of the things involved in making a company a really good fit for cross promotion? I mean, how do you know when someone's really ready?
Well, you're always ready. It's just a matter of finding the right fit in terms of working with other people. If you really look at what are your goals? Who is your ideal target market? Who are those people who are purchasing from you right now? Who are your best clients? And then ask yourself the questions of what do they need? What else are they purchasing before or after or at the same time as working with me or as buying from me? And then who are those providers who I could work with who serve the same market but don't offer the exact same thing that I do?
Mm-hmm. And what's usually involved in broaching these conversations to say, well, yes, I want to grow my business. And all right, so I see someone who might be a good cross promotion fit. You know, beyond mm-hmm. that, it almost feels like a blind date. What do you do? How do you open the door to start having those conversations if someone really doesn't know you?
Sure. So most of the time, new clients come to me through referrals, and they come because of the publicity, because they heard from one of their friends or from somewhere that, oh, this lady can get you, you know, in all these different media outlets, and they want the extra exposure in media and level of credibility and buzz that they could get by being featured in different media outlets. And then part of the work that I do is also connecting them with other influencers, but it's not the leading offer or the leading thing that they would come to me with. If somebody was specifically looking for developing partnerships only, they would probably be better off with connecting with an affiliate manager or a JV broker, a joint venture broker who specializes in doing just that. For me, it's part of the deal because a lot of my clients are in the same industry and they work with similar clients, so I'm able to find the right fits, but it's not the main part of the work that I do.
Right. But you've also said, and I saw on your website, it was a video you had, I believe, that publicity is not for everyone, that you and your business have to be ready for it if you're going to get results. And results
yes.
means more leads and more sales. So what is it within a business that needs to be ready for it so that, you know, business owners can know what kind of infrastructure or positioning has to be present?
Right. That's a really, really good question. So you have to have a mechanism to make sure that you have a way of converting that attention into leads and sales. So assuming you already have a well dialed in marketing and sales system where you know exactly where your clients or customers are coming from and what your numbers are, how much are you spending on advertising and what you can expect from that, then you have a baseline and now you can add the publicity to and add it in a way of actually generating additional traffic. That's one role of publicity. And the second one is also reusing all those media interviews as content that then you can repurpose and use in combination with your sales funnels, with your marketing funnels, with your retargeting, with your advertising, so that you don't just have that one-time appearance, but you have actually a lot more mileage out of all those interviews because you can reuse them over and over again. But it has to be something that is fit into a baseline structure that you already have in place and that works. So for somebody who is completely just starting out, it just wouldn't make sense to hire a publicist because they don't have a reliable way of actually generating revenue and generating new clients and customers. And so there wouldn't be something that the publicity would be an additional piece that we are adding onto. It would be just shooting in the dark and see what works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So in terms of the things, just to recap that, should be in place, because you had identified some of it and I just want to make sure our listeners really hear it. What are those different pieces that should be in place in terms of lead capture, lead conversion?
Yes.
Bullet point those so we know.
So you have to have an offer that your market responds to. There has to be something that people actually want to buy and are consistently buying. And you have to have some kind of a lead capture system in place. Like, for example, you might have an email list where you're marketing to people through giving them free content and then making offers also through email. And then that has to lead into some kind of a lead capture on your website, both on your homepage and on dedicated landing pages where people can opt in to receive freebie, a lead magnet, an ethical bribe, whatever you want to call it, that they download for free. And in exchange, then they will be part of your community and be on your email list where you can continually communicate with them. So it's a big difference, actually, between for example, being interviewed in traditional media like TV or radio or newspapers or magazines, there they will mention your main website. And if you have a physical product like a book or some kind of a widget, they will show that. But they will not direct people to the landing page to get your four-part video series or your ebook or whatever you have, right? Now, in online media, though, with podcasts and YouTube shows and presentations for paid masterminds, and there's just so many other ways of reaching the right target audience that is relevant to what your expertise is, there you gotta have something because they're actually expecting you to make an offer, at least a free offer, and in some cases, a paid offer as well. So you just gotta be ready for that with having an offer that you know is a good fit for that audience and have a dedicated landing page where people can go and get that information from you. That would be the next logical step to what you talked about in your interview. So they want to take the next step with you. And that also is something that will help them accomplish their goals. And in exchange, you receive an email address that then you can plug in into your marketing system.
Right. And that becomes an ongoing way of nurturing people, however it is you want to move them through and into becoming more dedicated customers. So when looking at, start first with traditional media, how do you make sure that this is really targeted and not just a bunch of, in terms of reaching out to different media outlets, how do you make sure that you're not just throwing a lot of spaghetti against the wall and hoping what sticks? Is media, is it really worth the time and the money? Because it does take time and money and effort.
Yes, it definitely does. And it's a matter of knowing exactly who your target market is and what kind of media do they consume. So for example, if your offer is a something that would be interesting to the general consumer, the average person on the street, maybe you have a fitness thing or a weight loss product or something like that, that the normal person might be interested in, then going the traditional route and being interviewed for TV and in radio and in magazines and all those types of traditional broadcast media outlets makes sense, because not only do you get the credibility by, you know, having those interviews and then you can put those logos on your website that you've been interviewed in all these places, but also from a traffic perspective, from actually generating eyeballs on your offer, it is targeted because it's something that the general consumer would use. Now, if you have a more niche offer, like, for example, you're a lawyer and you specialize in divorces, or you're somebody who does business coaching or something like that, that wouldn't be necessarily for the average person, you will be much more targeted by going after very particular type of publications. It still may be traditional media, like it might be a show on MSNBC, right? Or it might be something like a particular niche magazine that is catering to your target market. Or it could be online media, like podcasts, for example, are a great example because they have very small but very dedicated audiences who are really dialed in into that particular niche expertise that you have information on and that you can share and help them and then also generate clients from them. So it's just a matter of knowing what your goals are with your publicity campaign. Are you primarily looking for more credibility or for more leads and sales? It's not like one is better or bigger than the other. It's just knowing what you need right now and then going after those types of outlets for the next few months and then shifting as needed, or do both. You know, you might do traditional media, get a few of those big name logos, like be interviewed in Entrepreneur Magazine and Business Insider and all those places. You have those logos, you're done, never continue that anymore. You go after more niche audiences, like, for example, YouTube shows and speaking gigs and, you know, a podcast, anything like that, where you're actually doing it with sales in mind.
Okay. And is there a difference in your approach depending on whether you want to just build credibility versus building leads?
I would encourage all of my clients to do both, because one is great, but, you know, if you just have the credibility, but it's not helping you at all with your leads and sales, then it's not going to be
worth hiring a publicist.
Or you would really have to not care about your bottom line, which is most entrepreneurs is not the case. And if you're only going for very small niche publications that will help you with your leads and sales, but you don't have anything in terms of traditional media to elevate your own credibility, you will still get the results in terms of actually selling more and getting more clients, but you would get even more rapport and you would be in a position to raise your prices and have different packages if you had that credibility that traditional media can get you.
Mm, Okay, interesting. And you mentioned understanding the target market and the media they consume. How deeply do business owners need to understand? Is it enough to know the genre, or do you need to know the precise publications? And how do they find that out?
So it's understanding. It's not just so much about what kind of media they consume, because you can always have a few conversations with some of your best clients, and even informally just get them on the phone when you're working with them. And just, you know, like, what are your favorite magazines? Like, really not a very sophisticated or scientific approach to this, to find out if you really have no clue where to go. But normally most people you would see, because you see what your clients and customers do, what kind of articles do they share on their Facebook, what kind of topics are they interested in, and then you can see what media matches that. And it comes down to understanding really what do they want, what are their emotional triggers, what are their fears and desires, what keeps them up at night, what are their frustrations, what are the things that really are day-to-day very tangible, presentable things that bother them or that they're really striving forward. And then based on that, you can create this psychological profile that would be a good match for that, and then figure out from there what the media is.
Interesting. And talk to me a little bit about actually creating that media campaign. So let's say we have a business owner, they have a good website, they understand their customer, they've got a good way of generating traffic. What's the strategy behind creating a media campaign? What does that look like, and what kind of time is invested?
Sure. So the first thing is to really understand your ideal customer, right? And have a good offer, have a funnel in place. So the stuff that we talked about earlier, if you have that, then we would need to look at, are you looking at something that will be an ongoing thing that you do for the next year or next 2 years, to continually do at a slower pace, but just constantly doing it? Or is it a publicity campaign that is very specific to, for example, launching a book, and or you have an event or something that has a deadline, and you have to have as much media attention as possible in a short, concentrated period of time? So, for example, if you are going to launch a book, there is a deadline when that book comes out, and you want to ride and drive up the pre-orders as much as possible ahead of time, because you want to make it a bestseller. And that's part of the strategy, that, you know, the more pre-orders you have, the more likely it will be that it will be one of the bestsellers. Depending on, you know, the size of the campaign, it might be an Amazon bestseller or a New York Times bestseller. But either way, you need to drive those pre-orders. And so for that, you would have to have like a big blitz, a lot of media before that launch date, and all those interviews need to be published as much as possible. So that's a different strategy than an ongoing, I might do one or two interviews a week type of thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So once you're clear on that, now you can decide on on the level of intensity of how you're going to be pitching and how you're going to be approaching media outlets, how much lead time you need. Like, for example, for podcasts, it might be 3 to 4 months for some of the bigger shows like Entrepreneur on Fire or Mixergy, from the day it's pitched until the interview gets published. So right now it's December now. So if you had a book that's coming out in March, you would have to start pitching today for some of those shows.
Oh, yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind. For TV, it's anywhere from 2 to 6 weeks, depending on the topic. And of course, if it's breaking news type of thing, then that might be quicker. But most business owners don't have that. They have more of an evergreen thing. So they just have to find something that would fit into a local event or a holiday or something like that, to have some kind of a newsworthy angle, a news peg, and then schedule 2 to 6 weeks for that. For print magazines, again, it's 2 to 6 months, depending on the season and, of course, also what the article is about. And then for online magazines like Entrepreneur or Inc. or those types of things, it just depends on who you're approaching. If it's a staff writer, they might publish it the same day or the next day. If it's a contributing writer, it could be a few weeks.
But you're right. And you really do need to have a full media calendar. And I've heard that phrase bandied about, and now I'm actually visualizing it in my head. Oh my God, you're absolutely right. Because there are so many different times, and it will depend on whether you have an evergreen issue or whether there's something that's truly time sensitive.
Yes, that's right. And so once you're clear on that, then we need to think about, okay, assuming you get interviewed, what would be some of the good stories and examples and case studies and anecdotes that you could share that fit that audience, fit that particular media outlet, and it also lands with your ideal target market, so that you need to be really clear on exactly what we talked about, understanding your ideal target customer, the person who you want to work with, and really getting clear on what do they need to hear and believe in order to want to take the next step with you. Next step would be, of course, to call you or to opt into your email list or whatever your method is for converting the attention into leads and sales. So you would reverse engineer by knowing exactly what it is that they have in their minds. You know, what are some of those questions and objections that they usually come to sales calls with? Or are they kind of topics that you need to address through your content marketing or pre-framing and all those things that are conversations that are going on in their heads, and then finding the emotional triggers that are underneath it all, and then finding relevant stories from your own life, from your business life, from your clients' examples that would speak to those emotional triggers, and then literally creating an what we call intentional media message content, a cheat sheet for yourself to have specific examples and stories and case studies that you can share through your interviews, and then also be prepared for sharing it in a way that fits the specific media outlet. So for example, for a TV interview, 2-3 minutes, 4 minutes, very short, you only can have a bird's eye view type of 40,000 view perspective bullet point kind of approach. Whereas, for instance, in a podcast, you might have a half an hour to go deep into your methodology, into your story as an entrepreneur. So you would have a much more space to explain your stuff. So you got to be prepared for both, depending on what you've decided makes sense for your specific media campaign.
So you have beautifully teed up my next question. Thank you so very much. because it's again, media seems very amorphous. So what I'd love to hear from you is the story of a campaign against small business owner where things went really well. And then I'm going to ask you about one where something went disastrously wrong so that we can see what do we not do.
Ooh.
You know, so let's start with a happy story of moonbeams okay. and unicorns and sugar plums.
Yes. Well, a happy story would be my client, Ryan Levesque, who is the author of Ask. And mm-hmm. I worked with Ryan on his book launch last year for 11 months on launching this book. And it became a number one national bestseller. Inc. magazine named it the number one marketing book of the year. And we ended up adding over $1.8 million to his business per year because of the back-end sales, because of the funnel that we talked about. And the strategy that we used with him was that he would do a lot of different media, TV, radio, magazines as well, and then a lot of podcasts. And because Ryan has a very specific dialed-in funnel, you know, he knows exactly all the links that he puts out there through his advertising, through his podcast, through everything. He actually tracks everything and he knows all the way through from the first contact until somebody becomes a customer that exactly where people are coming from. And so what he discovered was that people who came through podcast interviews are his most passionate buyers. They are people who stay long-term in the membership, which was his back-end offer beyond the book. So people read the book, now they want help with the implementation, and they join his mastermind, the Next Level Mastermind, which is a $97 a month membership. And you know, that's where the money is made, not on the book. It's most people, unless you have millions of followers, you're a household name like Tony Robbins, most people don't make money on the book. You have to have something beyond it. So that's a really good example. And the strategy that we used there was combining the interviews with a free plus shipping offer. So meaning people would get the book for free, but they would pay for the shipping. And then they would be retargeted on Facebook. So Ryan would track all of those interviews with a special unique coupon code that was unique for each interview that he did. And then those people would be retargeted, meaning that they would be shown ads on Facebook and on other platforms as well, if they did not take him up on the offer. And so he was tracking all these results and seeing that people who saved the exact same ads, but they were not coming through a podcast interview, the results were really, really minuscule in comparison to people who came through podcasts. So this was a really, really cool experiment to see how powerful it can be when it's a niche media, but it's something that is really targeting your ideal target clientele.
Right. And as you mentioned, it sounds like it's not just that you added $1.8 million to back end sales, period. It sounds like that's an annual addition. Did I get that right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah, that's right.
That's nice. That's you know, I don't know what he paid you, but for that extra $2 million a year, that's a really, really nice boost. So, you know, can we look at and you don't have to name names, maybe a launch that, or let's look at maybe an evergreen campaign that didn't go so well, so we can possibly dissect why. And then
how do we,
as business owners, how do we work with publicists? What else do we need to have, again, in place in our business as systems so that this can flow really simply?
Yeah. And that would be an example of my own, actually. 3.5-4 years ago, when I first got started, I was doing marketing coaching at the time, and I was working with people one-on-one. And I really didn't know anything about the role of publicity and how it could help me. I just thought, well, I need more clients. Let me do some publicity. Completely shooting in the dark. And I managed to get myself on some of the biggest podcasts in the world, like, for example, Entrepreneur on Fire, pretty much right away. And I didn't have a freebie. I didn't have anything where people could opt in and join my email list, which would have been the most lowest hanging fruit of using that attention. Instead, what I was mentioning, that how people could take the next step with me, is to come and apply for a strategy session. And I booked in a bunch of people, but they were not the right fit. So the sales that resulted from that were just very, very minuscule in comparison to what it could have been if I had a freebie offer, some kind of a lead magnet, and then have people opt into my email list and nurture them, and then over time start making sales in a different way. But I didn't have a funnel. I didn't have any advertising going on at the time, nothing. And so it was just starting with putting the cart before the horse. And that was the whole reason why I found it wasn't successful. But I'm happy that it happened to me, because I don't have to experiment on other people. now I know that. Don't do that.
Yes, do not.
In fact, I don't even take on clients who don't have a funnel in place. If they tell me about their business on our first conversation, and if they don't have it, I refer them out to somebody, because I don't want them to have the same kind of experience. Because we can get you all the publicity you want, but you're not going to be happy with the results if it's not translating into leads and sales.
Okay, so if I'm understanding correctly, it sounds like media can be fabulous, but you aren't necessarily getting the perfectly targeted customers. That happens once you bring them into your fold and then have an opportunity to nurture them and gradually pre-qualify them to see what level of service is going to be best, if they're going to be a good client at all.
Well, it's never going to be 100% as filtered and as perfect of a match as if you had an application form where you ask them 300 questions before they have to close to talk to you, right?
And no one would fill that out anyway.
It doesn't work that way, that's for sure. But you can be definitely very targeted with the type of shows and media outlets that you're going after. Like, for example, a stay-at-home mom who is interested in, you know, things that have to do with raising kids is probably not going to be reading a business magazine, and vice versa. Oprah magazine will not be necessarily the choice of magazine for entrepreneurs. So you can narrow it down. And then also media outlets, especially in traditional media, have media kits. So you can actually request that from their website, and you can see, and then knowing your own research and who your ideal target clients are, you can cross-reference that and then see if it's a fit or not. And then with online media, it's very easy, because it's usually owned by independent entrepreneurs and business owners. You can have a conversation with them and ask what type of audience do they have, what kind of topics do they like to learn about, and then see if it's a fit for you or not. So from that perspective, you can absolutely narrow it down. You just have to be smart about it when you first start planning it. And then the second thing is, when you start repurposing these interviews, once they get published, you have a lot of power over that, because you can start sharing it through, for example, Facebook. You can put it through advertising as content in front of precisely the right target audience. So Facebook allows you to choose not just the demographics and the basic psychographics, but you can choose down to the zip code of where they live and what kind of companies do they work for, whether they're frequent credit card users. There's just so many different things that you can use. And then from the perspective of the person who just happened to come across your interview, oh, it's something that popped up in my newsfeed. But you were the one who put it in front of them, because you knew who they are, and you're reusing these media interviews as content in your funnel and in your advertising.
Great. And as we start to wrap, can you talk a little bit about how do we make sure that this isn't just a one-shot wonder? What is it that gives media or a media campaign or a strategy staying power, so that it can be a constant flow, as opposed to just, all right, I tried one thing. I sent a press release and nothing happened. I don't understand.
Yeah.
So what needs to be in place with that, especially for business owners who are in an evergreen situation, not necessarily a launch situation.
Mm-hmm. So for evergreen type of stuff, it's understanding who your ideal customer is and then talking about topics in your interviews that you know most of your customers are dealing with. What are some of those fears and desires and those objections that is the chatter that's going on in their head before they come in contact with you? So you can't speak to them from the perspective of what your solution is. You have to speak to them from the perspective of where they're at right now and speak to those emotional issues right now that they're facing with and dealing with. You might know, you know, that mindset is the key to losing weight, and you have to have your priorities straight and things like that. But if they are thinking that, oh, it's calorie counting, then you have to talk about calorie counting. So you have to meet them where they're at. That's number one, to have make sure that the topics feel relevant to where they are at emotionally and also education-wise. And then the second thing is to keep promoting it. So once you've been interviewed on a particular show and it's not a time sensitive, it's not like I talked about, you know, New Year's resolutions kind of thing, then you would want to keep promoting it through your social media, through your emails, putting it into your evergreen funnels that you already have set up as well, or through advertising, and then making sure that you have new eyeballs on it all the time.
Great. And last question for you, Esther, as we're coming to the end of the year, any top tip that you would suggest for business owners wanting to consider media? What should be part of their plan as they start to consider this for 2017 in a way to build their business?
Well, number one is to be really, really clear about what your goals are with it, whether it's making friends with influencers and high-level people, or is it getting the credibility? Is it creating a celebrity status for yourself in your niche industry? Depending on what those goals are, you would put together a very specific outreach method of what are the types of media that you need to be featured in, who are those influencers that you need to make friends with, and then make sure that you have a mechanism, an opt-in, a freebie that people can actually take you up on to make sure that you're collecting names and email addresses as well.
Terrific. Two very, shall I say, simple but not easy steps. Clarity around the goal and the outreach method. So Esther, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing about how we can really better leverage media a lot more strategically instead of just throwing a lot of crap to the wall and seeing what sticks. So thanks for being with us on Cash Out Big.
And thank you for tuning in to Cash Out Big. Are you working twice as hard as you should by reinventing the wheel every day? In my Cash Out Big training, I'll show you how to use my SCALE scale formula and make your life so much easier. You can find this and other great resources at businessexponential.com. Go there now, and I'll see you on the next podcast.